You're listening to Audio Culture on 95BFM.
Thanks to Audio Culture, Iwi Waiata, the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Go to audioculture.co.nz.
Welcome to the BFM studios. We've got Dr. Alicia Ward. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You lecture here at the Auckland University School of Music,
yes.
But first time up to BFM.
It is, ironically. You know, I did my undergrad here, did my PhD here, mm-hmm. Never been into 95BFM.
Did you have any sense that the station was on this floor in this part of the university?
Vaguely, yeah. I knew it was in the Union Building, but where exactly? I kind of knew it was up on the top floor somewhere, but
it all makes sense now. It's kind of cool.
It totally does.
It's cool to find out where something is.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. It's quite massive as well, isn't it? BFM's bigger than you think.
Absolutely. I know. I've only been here on and off for 20 odd years.
Yeah. Well, welcome. Welcome. This evening we're talking, obviously, audio culture and some of the articles which you've had a hand in and an interest in. We're talking women and jazz in Aotearoa, I guess, the history of jazz, you know, like as long as, you know, as far back as you can go.
Yep, definitely.
Where do we start when we look at women in jazz?
So we can start right back in the early 1920s. The thing about researching women in jazz in Aotearoa is the historical context is quite tricky because a lot of these women, when they were advertised in the newspapers, and there were a lot of band leaders as well, female band leaders in the 1920s, the thing is that half the time you don't know what their first name is.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, to give you a very good example, one that's been bugging me for about a decade now, in Christchurch, there was a band leader called Miss McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
She had a stable of bands. She was a pianist, I know that much, and she would accompany singers and dance recitals and things like that as a soloist. Mm. She also led two or three different bands in Christchurch in the early 1920s. One was sort of a string orchestra, one was a jazz band, I know that much. I have no idea what her first name is. Mm. I've never been able to find it. Mm. She does not appear in the census records because women in the census only ever get their marital status recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't see anything like occupation in the census in the 1920s mm-hmm. for women. So I don't know which of the hundreds of Miss McDonald's that are on the census in Christchurch in the 1920s is this particular one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's not like a jazz forum down there where there's McDonald's from her lineage still playing music.
Sadly, not that I have found. Yeah.
Okay.
So the thing about the history of jazz in New Zealand and keeping in touch with the history of jazz is that, unfortunately, we have very short memories.
Mm.
There are people who have been performing jazz for 20, 30, 40 years who will know their immediate, you know, mentors and predecessors on the scene, but they won't know anyone from the 1940s, the 1930s. They've never heard of any of these people, even though some of these people are actually the biggest names in New Zealand music at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, this short history, it makes trying to find these things out really challenging.
I guess this is kind of where audio culture steps in to document the small pieces of knowledge that people do have.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic resource for kind of joining the dots and slowly piecing together this puzzle.
Absolutely. And, you know, actually just in the last couple of weeks, I was contacted by the great grandniece, I think that is correct, of Elsie Nixon, who we will be talking about in a moment, saying that she'd seen my article on Elsie in Audio Culture and wanted to know if I would like to know more about the family history.
Yes.
So even though that's not music history, that's just, you know, biographical stuff, it's still really interesting and it can still fill in a lot of gaps that I don't know from my own research.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've got a couple of tunes lined up, slipping into this arc of women in jazz in Aotearoa. Where should we start? And, I mean, what is the first song you've chosen and why?
So Let's see if I can remember which songs I chose. So Nancy Harry, yes, is probably a good place to start. So she is one of our earliest female recording artists. She was a pianist, mm-hmm, and she was a very popular pianist, particularly as an accompanist. So, mm-hmm, she was a pianist in a lot of the radio bands from the 1930s and 1940s. So the radio at that time, you had more live bands playing in the studio than you did recordings. A lot of reasons for that. Part of it was budgetary. It was cheaper to hire a band, mm-hmm, than to pay APRA licensing fees and to continually buy, you know, records for your library and everything. So there were all these radio bands, and the people that played in these bands were the cream of the crop. They were, mm-hmm, the best people in music in New Zealand, because you, mm-hmm, had to audition to get into these bands. You had to audition the bands to get on the radio. Mm-hmm. So Nancy was in a lot of these bands. She is possibly one of our best known and yet unknown pianists, mm-hmm, because her playing appears in a lot of recordings, a lot of radio jingles, most famously for particularly the older listeners out there, the Geddes Dental ad. Mm-hmm. So she was the pianist on that, and she played in a lot of these radio jingles. She accompanied a lot of singers, but a lot of people didn't really know her name. So a lot of the recordings, we only know that she was the pianist on because of a couple of very devoted collectors who did discographical work, finding out who actually played on all, mm-hmm, of these early recordings, because a lot of the union information for the sessions has unfortunately, you know, been chucked out along the way. Mm-hmm.
All right, shall we hear it?
Yeah.
This is Nancy Harry, Alexander's Ragtime Band. Skimming through some of the stuff you sent across, you know, you look at the amount of playing that all of these musicians do in their time, and they're the real deal. They're sort of going out and performing for 5 or 6 hours a night for many nights on end, working their craft.
Yeah.
If you think about that and the level of playing and the proficiency that they must reach, you know, like playing their instrument or whatever, they were no doubt, you know, the best of the best. And it's hard to think that, you know, people really get the opportunity in the modern world to play as much as they did.
No, well, I mean, you know, we're talking 1930s, 1940s when the cabaret was king. So, you know, people went out dancing all hours of the night, basically. You know, the big cabarets like the Peter Pan Cabaret, the Metropole, all of these cabarets, you know, you would be, you know, they'd open up for 8 p.m. to start dancing. They'd go through until the last trams at 1 a.m. And this would be 6 and 7 nights a week. You know, don't buy into the whole, you know, oh, New Zealand was so boring, it closed at 5. No, there was this whole nightlife going on with the cabarets, with the theatres. And of course, there were live orchestras for the theatres as well. You've got the Civic Winter Garden. So you had the theatre band playing for the movies or for the for a live show. And then some people will know this, but others won't. The orchestra pit was a floating orchestra pit. So it would descend from the theatre down into the winter garden. So at the end of the movie or the theatre show, the band would play an outro in which they would actually be sinking on their platform from the theatre down into the winter garden, where they would immediately start their dancing set. So they didn't even get a break between playing for the movies and then starting to play for dancing afterwards. So that would be like 10 p.m. and they'd go and still play through to, you know, 2 a.m.
Are they making a fairly good living as a musician in this era?
In this era, you could actually live as a performing musician, particularly if you were single. You know, you could earn a good wage if you were single and take care of yourself, particularly if you were willing to, you know, play 7 nights a week for 6 or 7 hours a night.
It's a 4 week of work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, we're sort of moving along to a contemporary of Nancy Harry's, Esme Stevens. What can you tell me about Esme?
Esme Stevens was one of our best-known popular jazz vocalists in the 1940s. She actually performed at 19 with the Artie Shaw Band when they toured here in 1943. So the Artie Shaw Band came to tour the US military encampments that were here in the war. And their first gig was at the St. James, sob sigh, where they played a couple of concerts before embarking on their North Island tour. And in the first concert, it was suggested maybe they wanted to break things up a bit by having a local female vocalist sing with them. And Artie Shaw was a bit like, yeah, whatever, just organise it, do it, I don't care. And so Esme Stevens was possibly the best known Auckland singer at the time. So she got tapped on the shoulder to do this because she was, again, a radio singer, like Nancy Harry was a radio musician. So she had a lot of repertoire. She knew how to rehearse with an orchestra really quickly to get up to performance standard and to, you know, produce a performance, top quality performance at short notice. At 19, remember. So so she did this. She played two songs with the Artie Shaw Band, though sadly not Artie Shaw. He took a break during her set. And they have been recorded. So she recorded White Christmas, and I forget what the B-side was. And records of this still exist. So it was recorded by Noel Peach of Astor Records and Esme's soon-to-be husband, Dale Alderton. They recorded on a transcribing record player and then did a line record. So literally cables down from the St. James all along Lawn Street, High Street to Shortland Street where Astor Records had their recording studio. So the record would actually get transferred down into the recording studio for the master take. So that was pressed this is pre-commercial recording area, so mm-hmm. it's only a small press, so a lathe cut press rather than what we would call a commercial press these days. There are, I think, about 50 copies perhaps made. I know of three that are still in existence. Mm-hmm. One at least is at the Alexander Turnbull Library in Wellington. One is at the Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers University in Newark, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. The third one that I know of is in a private collection. Yeah.
And this is one of the tracks right here, Castle?
No. That hasn't been digitized, sadly.
Okay, all right.
One day, we hope. Hint, people at Alexander Turnbull Library. Mm-hmm. So this song, Castle Rock, is a song that she sang with her husband's radio band. This is mm-hmm. Dale Alderton's radio orchestra from 1YA. It was... interestingly, likely recorded in the 1ZB Radio Theatre, mm-hmm. which used to be on Durham Street back in the day. And this is actually a cover of, at that time, a popular overseas song.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Let's hear it.
Goodbye. I felt like I was drifting across the sky. We rocked to heaven to the castle rock. Music was soft and low, setting me all aglow. Calling him to my heart, how could I dream with God? Suddenly he was gone, leaving me dreaming on. Now every time they play the castle rock, I'll take myself a walk around the block till he comes back to dance the castle rock.
Esme Stevens and friends with Castle Rock. We're talking women in jazz and Aotearoa throughout history, all thanks to audio culture. There's a bunch of articles on audio culture for you to check out if you have got a bit of a penchant or taste for this. In studio with me right now, if you've just tuned in, I have got Dr. Alicia Ward from the Auckland University in here giving us a bit of a history rundown. The next character who features on the show this evening is Mavis Rivers.
Mm. Mavis Rivers is possibly, well, pre-Lord, she is possibly our best known, most awarded singer. So Mavis Rivers was born in Western Samoa and grew up in American Samoa. That's where she got started singing with her father's band. And then the family moved to Auckland just after the World War II. Mm-hmm. And she got started just singing as you do around Auckland, building an audience. And the recording we will listen to is actually one of, not quite her first recording, but it's her first live recording at the Auckland Jazz Concert in 1950, which was a momentous occasion because this was the first proper jazz concert, not only in Auckland, but in New Zealand as well. So it was a real change in scene. You're going from jazz as dance music, which is what we heard with Esme Stevens and Castle Rock, to jazz as a listening music, where people would technically sit down and listen to jazz, like we do today. Although in these jazz concerts in the 1950s, there was still a lot of people getting up and dancing in the aisles. So we're in a transition period now, late 1940s, early 1950s, where jazz really is moving from being the youth music, the pop music of the day, the music that everyone was dancing to a music that people were going to sit down and listen to. They were going to now go to nightclubs and to restaurants like the Hey Diddle Fiddle. Hey Diddle Griddle on K Road. And they would actually listen to jazz. Now they'll go to coffee lounges and sit down and have the latest thing, the espresso, and listen rather than going and dancing to jazz. So this is a period where musical tastes are changing and the ways of entertainment are changing. So it's all linking in together. So Mavis Rivers, at this time, she is a young singer and she's singing in this concert. And she has an amazing mature voice for basically 20 years old. It's incredibly mature. A few years after this, in 1953, she moves to the US to attend Brigham Young University in Utah to study music. She studied music there for a couple of years, though she didn't complete a degree. And then she starts singing on the cabaret circuits in California, where she is then picked up by Capitol Records. Now, Capitol Records at the time was one of the biggest record labels in the world. This is the record label that had Frank Sinatra on it. That's how big it was. They'd actually eventually give Frank Sinatra his own imprint on the label. And he actually poached Mavis Rivers from Capitol later in the 1960s. So she gets signed with Capitol Records in the late 1950s. And her first album, her first outing on Capitol, gets her an award nomination for a Grammy Award, Best New Artist, in the second Grammys of all time in 1960. So I love Lorde. She is amazing, but she did not get our first solo new artist nomination. So that goes to Mavis Rivers in 1960. Unfortunately, she lost out to, you know, some other famous guy. but, you know, we can still say that she got this nomination, which was really amazing at the time. And she went on to have a really huge career in the US. She would do residencies in Las Vegas at a time when doing a residency in Las Vegas meant you were at the pinnacle of your career, not at the tail end of your career. She eventually re-signed with Frank Sinatra on his imprint and put out so many recordings. She recorded with really big jazz arrangers like Nelson Riddle, Oliver Nelson, yeah, just amazing names. She did really have most of her career based in the US, and she'd only come back to New Zealand for visits after that. But she's such an amazing singer.
Awesome. Hey, Dr. Alicia Ward, thank you very much for this evening. If people want to find out more, audioculture.co.nz is the place to head to there, I guess. The puzzle is slowly getting put together of all these amazing people and women.
Very slowly. There's a lot more work to be done. If anyone out there is interested in researching jazz history, go to it because I can't do all of it. And there's so many really interesting stories about women and men across history playing jazz that we really need to know more about.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Alicia. This is Mavis Rivers with How High the Moon.
when love is far away too, till it comes true that you love me as I love you. Somewhere there's music, it's where you are. Somewhere there's heaven, how near, how far. The darkest night would shine if you would come to me soon. Thank you.